Welcome to the World of Horror Podcast, episode 123. On this podcast, we have a special conversation with a very special guest, Stephen McDonald, a filmmaker from Hamilton, Ontario, and a good friend of the pod. We talk about David Cronenberg's 1983 prescient classic, Videodrome. We also get off on a couple of tangents, but I hope you enjoy our ramble anyway. And thank you, as always, for your support of the podcast. Without further ado,
welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you kindly.
Today, our mission is to talk about Videodrome from 1983. It's the 40th anniversary, you guys. So I thought before the year clicks over, we should get together and have a chat about this.
This sounds like a doomed mission.
Oh, it's
time is running out.
Mac, before you got on, Stefan said he didn't really remember when the first time he had seen Videodrome. Do you remember the first time you saw Videodrome?
Yes, I think it was in college because I had a roommate that was very obsessed with, I mean, just like every Cronenberg movie and David Lynch. They were obsessed with those two directors specifically. So, but that was good. It's nice to watch something with someone when they're like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You know, that's a good energy going in.
Yeah. That's a good cheerleader for a film.
Yeah, for sure. Cause some of those films, you know, you're kind of like, if you know nothing, you're kind of waiting in like what is happening. So to have somebody be like, by the way, this is great. You're like, yeah, it is.
And what was your impression, Mac, when you first watched this film?
I just thought that the quote, long live the new flesh, was like, you know, incredible. I just feel like it just gets stuck in your head. And that I was happy to see Debbie Harry. And well, and that I liked it a lot. I like Cronenberg. I think I'd already seen The Fly. And maybe Existence. So it was kind of like, you know, familiar territory.
Cool. I don't remember the first time. It came out in 83. And I might not have seen it until, you know, 10 or 15 years later. So I actually don't have any memory of when I first saw this film. But, I think I got a little obsessed with it. And so I watched it over and over. Might have even been on videotape. Watching it over last day or two, I'm completely lost, you guys. You're gonna
That's
have
why
to
it's
help
a doomed
me.
Mission.
We're picking you up.
Just trying to contextualize this movie is just is a difficult endeavor.
Yeah, and that I feel like that's what some people like about it is that it does kind of feel like a fever dream while you watch it, which feels very much like the point, you know, of like, what is reality? What is going on? I feel like sometimes if you look at a movie of like in a pure sense of like, I want it to tell me like a story, you know, then it can feel frustrating. But then when you think about like, okay, well, if it all felt kind of like a dream and that I didn't know what was real, that's definitely what he was going for. So good job.
Yeah. And I can completely understand why somebody doesn't like this movie because I feel like a lot of people respond poorly to unreliable narrator movies or like fever dream movies. They're just like, oh, if I'm not tethered to anything, then it loses its impact. So I can understand why somebody doesn't like it entirely.
Yeah. I do feel like it's a movie where multi-viewings, like, well, I guess not in the case of you, Mom, of like now feeling more confused than ever, but like I feel like if you watch it multiple times and you know what's happening, you can really appreciate the, like, you know, just the vibes and the tone of it, which is how I felt this time, even though it had been a minute. So I was kind of like, what is happening? But then I've now come around again and been like, okay, this is great.
Okay. So in broad strokes, we have James Woods. He plays Max Wren, who is the head of this Channel 13, is that correct? Or 83, sorry.
83, 83, yeah. Or Civic TV.
Civic TV, the one you take to bed with you.
Yeah. Oh, man. So Canadian.
He, He is on a panel chat show with Nikki Brand, played by Debbie Harry. And on a television screen, we have Dr. Oblivion. And he says this really great line. He says something like, that's why I never appear on TV unless I am on TV.
I love the cut to the like interviewer's face. Like she had no idea what to do with that. And she kind of was just like, okay, moving on.
I love that he says that like in the future we'll all have like our video identities. And I'm like, yes, we do have our video identities.
We do.
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of the times he just is so on point. Like it's kind of scary. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he's not the first person to say something like that, but the fact that that is true.
Yeah. this is based on Marshall McLuhan, a Canadian philosopher. A very, well, I guess there's debate on whether he's like a philosopher or a poet, because the thing he's most famous for is more, I guess, like poetic as like a text, but it's the medium is the message. Marshall McLuhan had been like a professor at the U of T, University of Toronto, when David Cronenberg had went there. So a very influential person. But the idea is that the medium is ignored, or its importance is ignored in favor of the content that is produced within it. Because so like an individual movie is like as part of like a filmic output is, you know, is looked at for meaning versus like film in general and its influence on human life, I guess, is kind of like his theory, in that the connective tissue of human life is reconfigured and understood structurally with the advent of film, unbeknownst to most people. Like, and that is, I guess, to a certain point, quite true, because like we look at, I mean, I at least look at films for, you know, like, oh, like this is how life should go or something to some extent, even though that's wildly incorrect and unreasonable. But like it does create that view in my very small brain.
I totally relate to that. Yeah. I feel like that's something I had to get over of like, when I was younger, kind of, you know, baby Mac being like, so what do I do as a person now? It's like, you do, if you watch a lot of TV, you are going to be like, well, that's okay. This is the framework of everything. And then you get older and you're like, no, none of that is true. And, or like, these people know what they're talking about. No, they don't.
Everybody's and lost.
And that even like life is sequential in a way of like, I guess that's technically true. But if you think of it that way, then you'll think like, oh, I'm old. Time's running out or something like that.
Right.
You know, I feel like it has definitely shaped my brain.
So you guys are talking about the content of films, right? Not like.
Or sort of the character of movies. The content is like, is what is more readily dissected. And the character of the medium is ignored. So in this example, you know, we talk about Videodrome, but we're not talking about film as like its effect on society is Marshall McLuhan / Brian Oblivion's viewpoint, I suspect.
Okay. So okay. So Videodrome is a show, and on this show we have snuff films and I guess torture, and that stuff is pirated and stolen and then like rebroadcast on Civic TV.
Right? So it's not rebroadcasted, I don't think. I was reading through the Wikipedia out of curiosity, and it sounds like it's wrong. I think in certain sections. So Max Wren, he could be contextualized very easily with like the opening scene where he's like looking at stills for a show that he's going to go meet distributors to potentially just, you know, buy for his network. And he goes to like this old pizza box. He like grabs a piece of like a half eaten piece of stale pizza and then smears like tomato sauce onto the photo and then just rubs the photo onto his house coat. That is Max Wren. He's disgusting. Like he's just like a glib. He lives like as if he's in university still. He's looking for the next big thing for television. And he's like largely just like kind of like a smut peddler. I think is probably the best way to put it to a certain extent. Not saying like, you know, pornography is smut and that's bad, but like that he's I don't think he views pornography in like a good way. So in that sense, he's a smut peddler. Like, I don't think he has a good view of the world. Let's put it that way. But so but also, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is he seems naive, or he's revealed to be naive.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, how do they get actors to do this? And
that is such a great one. There's like a face, or I think he's talking. Is that when he's talking to Masha? He's talking to somebody and they just give him a look like, stupid idiot.
So I think he gets stuff traditionally through distributors like Masha, who's a character that we'll eventually meet. And then he's looking at like another show. And then Harlan, who is the person who runs their like illegal satellite dish, then looks for other material for them to pursue for distribution. So I don't think they broadcast it. I think that they're trying to find things and then pursue it for distribution, I think.
Okay, so got it. Okay, all right. Now, Brian Oblivion says that when you watch Videodrome, you develop brain tumors which cause hallucinations in you. And this seems to immediately happen to Max.
Yeah. So very early on in the sequence of events, he has the bad meeting in a hotel that still exists in Toronto and looks almost identical and maybe even is worse inside. I'm not sure. But he goes to Harlan and then Harlan shows him this rough signal. So at that very moment, we're now on a off the map mental exploration, I suppose, or hallucinatory voyage.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because, like, when you think about it, so it's revealed that eventually, I'm skipping ahead, but Brian Oblivion is dead, and he's just recorded a whole bunch of tapes for his existence. But like, the mechanics of that are stupid because he's in when Nikki and Max Wren are having their sit down, he's on a television. Like, how do they program the pauses for when he's going to have his answers? The answer is because he's already having hallucinations. So like the mechanics of the movie don't really have to make sense.
So that's not true. So it's not true that he died a year ago.
Oh, I have no idea. I think anything, like, I just think that, like, you don't have to worry about, like, the normal mechanics of story anymore. Like, it's all gone. We're just going to have, like, a little voyage with our gross buddy, Max Wren.
Yeah. I do love how poignant it is of, like, watching this stuff will literally, like, rot your brain in a sense. Like, we are seeing his brain be rotted from watching violent imagery, and that being some, or I was learning more about, you know, the state of film, like when this movie came out, and like Cronenberg talked a lot about like censorship and how difficult and also like just like not fun, you know, as a filmmaker it was to go through. And I saw somebody put it as this was like playing devil's advocate of like, okay, so it rots your brain. Like, what happens? You know? And I do love that. And again, I do think it's just so wild how like, again, it's reached a new medium. Like people have kind of been done talking about that with, or people aren't done talking about it with movies, but now it's a huge issue with like video games and stuff.
Yeah.
And does that rot your brain? And I just feel like, again, he's so on it.
So in Canada at the time, it was like very conservative, and like it was even conservative when I was like going through like a university. But in the 80s, basically, if you get like an X rating, to get an X rating, like anything that exceeds an X rating gets cut out of your movie. You're not allowed to exhibit it, is the context through which he came up. So this is very much a, to jump ahead, like it's revealed that Videodrome is being utilized as a plot to kind of like rid the world of people who want to seek out this kind of content in order to just, you know, kill them, essentially, to get rid of the rot of America. And it feels very much like a, like thumbing his nose at censor boards to a certain extent in this movie, which I'm a huge fan of. As somebody with oppositional defiance disorder, I'd say. Oh man, I'm comically like, if I, it's so embarrassing. I'm like a 10-year-old boy where somebody tells me to do something, I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. I'm going to arrive at the conclusion myself, and then I'll do it. But
yeah,
yeah, it's my most like obnoxious trait for sure. Yeah.
Well, I think from what I saw online about this movie, it seems like he wanted to do a lot more with it, but, you know, he just basically ran out of money. And so some of the special effects that he wanted were just like impossible given the budget that he had. But the special effects that we get, I think, are pretty good.
Yeah, they're really, really good. Yeah, I'm very... I'm happy with a lot of them. There's like one where when he develops like the stomach orifice, where you can see like his arm. That looks like a little, like it looks too small. It doesn't look exactly right. And I think he wasn't even happy with it. But even that, it's like, you know, if you squint, it's like it's fine, and it's such a brief blip. But
I more felt like I don't know. I feel like restrictions can create more opportunities for creativity, and like even when I see stuff like that and I even notice that it's like a flaw, it feels just so much more like a person did this. That's really nice.
Yeah.
And I like flaws, I know what too. They're trying to do, you know.
Yeah.
And the one effect at the end when he shoots the balder of the, you know, of his targets. I don't remember his name.
Convex?
Yes, yeah. He, like, you know, erupts from within, and that, I was like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's shooting tumors, essentially.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, so this is, he's just, like, full of tumors.
Yeah.
Very convex. Yeah. Yeah. Really nasty and disgusting. But Harlan's arm is also pretty gross.
Oh yeah.
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 The explosion's kind of funny too, also. But you know what? I'm fine with it. Like,
yeah. You
know, the plot for this is pretty wild, but I guess like if we want to bring Barry Convex, it's Barry Convex, right? Brian Oblivion and Barry Convex. I'm afraid of swapping their first names. So in this hallucinatory journey, Brian Oblivion is one of the creators of like the originator of the Videodrome signal. Then he's killed by his partners once he realizes their intent of trying to distribute this signal, and thus, you know, offing all of the people who would be interested in that kind of like, you know, contraband, I guess, or whatever you'd want to call it. And Harlan is a party to this. It's revealed. So he is kind of like the errand boy for Barry Convex, who owns a place called Spectacular Optical.
Yes.
Which, when they list what this place does, it's really, really funny. They're like modern solution. Like, it's like they list a bunch of things that they do that are like kind of like innocuous. And then they're like, and we make arms for NATO or something. Like,
yeah.
They end on like a really funny note. So is that like a good succinct description of like what happens? I'm not sure if I'm missing anything that would.
I think so. I mean, I think it gets a little confusing for me at the end. Like, who are the, you know, is there like, who's on what side and what are, you know, what are people actually fighting for or whatever? And part of the problem might be that Brian Oblivion seems kind of sketch.
Yeah. So this is my weird daughter.
And Barry seems... Barry Convex seems very sweet to me, despite the fact...
What?
No, he does! He's got a very soft voice, and I know that he's an arms dealer or whatever, or, you know... Maybe I'm just messed up when it comes to, you know...
So a soft voice goes a long way, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
My first thought when I saw him was like, oh, this guy's a bad guy.
He's like pure evil, Christina. Come on.
All right. Well, now
it worked. It worked on you.
Okay. The other thing I was a little bit confused about was Nikki Brand goes to audition for Videodrome in mm-hmm. Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or wherever she's
from. Pittsburgh. Yeah,
Pittsburgh,
you got it.
Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a funnier sounding city name. And she is killed. Is that correct? Okay. But she still appears in Max's hallucinations, you know, up to the very last moment of Max's life. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that was just a little bit confusing for me, too. I'm sorry. I mean, I like complicated plots, and I think I'm usually fine, but for some reason I felt really tripped up by this one.
No, that's totally fair.
Yeah, definitely. But like, I think if you just like look at it as like two sides, so we have Bianca / Brian Oblivion on one side, and then we have Barry Convex and Harlan on the other. That's like, those are the only real warring parties, because, you know, when, not early on, I guess this would probably be like just past maybe the middle, where Harlan, as he develops his like stomach orifice, Harlan gives him a videotape that essentially programs instructions for him to kill his partners at Civic TV in order to essentially give them ownership of it so they can broadcast Videodrome. And then when they give him another tape to go kill Bianca Oblivion, she then reprograms him, which is when he goes and shoots the tumor bullets. This sounds insane. It sounds like I'm rambling right now.
But it is what happens.
Yeah.
Like, that is the plot.
So there's essentially just two sides, really. But it's presented in such a way that it is intensely confusing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't know what side Harlan is on, you know, so that seems like a double cross. And I didn't understand. why it was so important to kill all the people at the TV station. Like, why can't you just like take over the TV station? Like, I don't. But
like, you know, they're making him a sicko. Yeah. Like, you're a real sicko. Now go do a shooting.
Okay.
Go do a shooting.
That's what the tape
is. I mean, and the other thing is, this is kind of a funny movie because it's not like Breaking Bad where you take like a really, you know.
That's the only time they've ever been compared, ever.
Well, all I mean by that is... The whole experiment of Breaking Bad was to take somebody who was like a completely innocent, milquetoast, boring character and turn him into like pure evil, right? But in this case, you have James Woods' character and he's just a slime ball from jump. It's just that he gets reprogrammed when he has these Betamax videotapes inserted into his tummy.
A superior format.
Max, did you know about the war between Betamax and VHS?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well,
I just opened up a can of worms. I'm sorry.
No, it's just a piece of history. So those little videotapes were a different format but you had to buy either a Betamax player or a VHS player, and you kind of didn't know at one point, like, which one was going to be the superior, you know,
format. Well, everyone, if they had just watched Videodrome, we'd be living in a world now.
No, but I read they had to have it as the smaller, the Betamax ones, so that they would, like, fit, you know, into the origin.
They look nicer than VHS.
Yeah, honestly, they do. They're cuter.
I'm glad that they made that decision, like, that they made that creative decision, because now I'm thinking, like, that would look stupid. Putting that, yeah, like, trying to put that giant VHS tape in his stomach.
His especially tummy. If they took out the, like, clamshell, like, Disney box.
Oh, yeah. Just crack it open.
Sorry. No, I mean, that's an example of a practical effect that I really like. The kind of, like, breathing of the tape.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the TV, like, when it, like, extended out, I just feel like I love, I don't know, just, I feel like, you know, he's just, I guess, depicting what is said so often and what probably he has felt like of, like, because, like, there are times, you know, when I'm talking about loving a horror movie and I'm thinking, like, I really want to talk about how great these guts and, like, this murder scene was and how it captured, you know, this brutal moment so much. But you're talking to somebody where you're like, what is this conversation going to be? They're not going to enjoy this. And you do kind of feel like a weirdo sometimes. And I feel like he's saying, like, okay, here's your weirdo. This is what, you know, you all think this person would be, I guess. Yeah. And I, like, you know, I don't like him. I don't like Max Wren necessarily, but I understand where I feel like Cronenberg's coming from there. Like,
oh, yeah, for
especially
sure.
Especially at a time where, I guess, the censorship was so intense, like, you'd feel even more, like, ostracized for you. Just, you know, I don't think enjoying horror movies makes you, like, a sicko, you know?
Yeah. In most cases, you're the more empathetic person.
Like, I that's think the, so.
Yeah. But I think, like, Max Wren is, like, the, like, that, to your point, like the analogous version of himself that the censor board sees to a certain extent. It's like, yeah. Oh, they think that I'm just peddling garbage. So
yeah.
Max Wren will be peddling garbage. Or not garbage, but you know what I mean. Pornography isn't necessarily garbage. I don't want to be.
I mean, like, for some of those, like, you know, the woman getting, like, strung up and whipped. It's like, yeah. You know, I would be like, why you have that tape?
Yeah, very fair, reasonable. Are you saying Nikki Brand is wrong to just, like, jump into kink immediately?
Okay, well, they were also being so brazen on that TV show. I felt bad for the TV presenter.
Oh, I, like, love that scene. It's so funny.
No, me too. It's so good. I love that she's just like, I'm third wheeling right now on my television show.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. That is really so funny. He's just like, hey, I want to take you out for dinner, you know. And the just blonde lady's like, just like, what's going on with my show?
Oh, man.
Oh, I want to say, there was that thesis that we just saw recently. This movie has a similar great moment of, like, I know that room. You know that, that moment of when he even mentions, like, the clay wall in the video he's watching at the beginning. And then when he's whipping the TV and it's the clay wall, I was like, I love that moment. So, like, they didn't point it out. It just, you notice it and you understand.
And I haven't seen Thesis in, like, 15 years, I think, or something I've seen.
Do yourself a favor.
Oh, it's good. I liked it. I don't know why I haven't rewatched it. A-plus movie, though.
Yeah, really good. But, okay, I'm also a little bit confused by...
Are we going to introduce another confusing movie? Oh,
no,
sorry.
Although I do, in my vast research, you know, a half hour before we got on, I did see that Total Films has a 23 weirdest films list, and I wanted to go through that with you guys. But before we do that, I wanted to talk about Max Wren's kink. Like, I don't get what it is. Like, she's into cutting, and she's putting out cigarettes on her skin, and he wants to pierce her ears?
I don't think that he necessarily enjoys it. I think he's doing it to the pleasure of
for her.
And, yeah. You know. I think that's largely it. I think he's just, like, going along with it. Because even when she suggests that she wants to go audition for Videodrome, go to Pittsburgh and have a great time, he's like, nah, these people are, like, play hard. Like, it's the real thing. Like, he feels like maybe the more or the less experienced person, or the not experienced is probably not the best way to put it, but, like, willing to explore, you know, S&M as much as she does, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I did think it was
kind of great. It kind of, like, throws him off of, like, oh, you think you're weird? Yeah. He's like, whoa, I don't know. Like, it was a fun thing to do with that character, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's great stuff. I like the dynamic a lot.
I thought it was kind of funny when Barry Convex wanted to, like, tape his hallucination. And he's like, I hope you don't expect me to stick around. I can't cope with the freaky stuff.
It's such a good line. I love it.
That was a great delivery, too. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Well, Barry's my guy. I mean, I'm a Barry stan.
It's got that sweet voice. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I'm, like, kicking to talk about for, but I'm not sure. There's, like, so much. This is, all right, I have, like, an ADD brain, so it's, like, there's, like, everything that I want to talk about, and then I forget everything.
Yeah, you're in good company.
It's like a convention of ADD brains on this call. Okay, two things I wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Nikki Brand's show is called The Emotional Rescue Show, and I... I just really like that the love interest, you know, is identified with that show. And the other thing I liked was the cathode ray mission.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I love that so much.
I just love it that we have all these unhoused people and they are, like, gathering in a church and they are receiving the television or, like, the transmission. And I think that McLuhan was Catholic, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
But, I mean, Cronenberg's, you know, virulent. Not virulent. What's the word? Violent. He's an atheist.
Staunchly an atheist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Virulent.
He's a virus?
He's a virus. We might have to, like, record earlier in the day.
Yeah, for real.
Next time.
I'm like anything creative I have to do in, like, the morning. I don't think either of you can relate to this, but, like,
yeah,
come the evening time, I'm like, give me my dumb reality television, and my brain is mush. I mean, it's mush mostly, but, like, it's more mush, more mush, like, in the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm going to cut a lot of that out, but I did want to talk about reality TV.
I'm enjoying it. This is a great conversation.
No, I did want to talk about reality TV because, Mac, you had mentioned, you know, sort of the idea that, you know, all this stuff rots your brain.
Yeah.
And I do wonder about reality TV. I don't care what people do with their time. And I watch stuff, you know, too, stuff. And you know that I watch those, like, dating shows.
I have a weird relationship with reality. Or what were you going to say?
I was going to say that, like, for me, and, like, this is maybe not the best confession, but it's, like, how people like to watch like a car accident as they pass. That's how I feel with like reality television, where I'm like, but like that doesn't feel good necessarily, because it feels like, yeah, I'm like putting myself above the people who are on the show, and I kind of, it's like an exploitative medium to begin with, so I kind of feel bad about it. But like, largely I'm just like, you shouldn't be in a relationship, you shouldn't be pursuing a relationship, you need to get yourself right first. And I'm just watching a car wreck that is like Love is Blind or The Ultimatum. If you're offering an ultimatum, you should just like,
yeah, that's,
you should not be on a TV show. You're done. Yeah.
Mac, have you seen The Ultimatum?
No.
Or do you know the premise of the show?
You're missing nothing. You're missing
nothing. It's like a couple that like they're about to break up and somebody makes an ultimatum, but now they put up like, if you don't do it or you do it in this time, something happens.
Well, yeah, they're saying you should propose to me or we're going to break up.
Oh, boy.
So they repartner and then get back together after.
Oh, I have heard of this.
Yeah, it's a mess. That's so fucked up. It's a mess. But somebody hit somebody in the second season. You saw that, right?
Yeah, the most recent one was people from Charlotte, North Carolina, so represent. Yeah. I don't know if you stuck with that one, Stefan. Actually, they left, like, right after that. But, No, I was talking to my boyfriend about this, and I was like, they have to get people in their 20s, because I don't think that, you know, people beyond a certain age would, like, just tolerate this. They'd be like, what?
Be surprised.
Well,
with maybe so. Fiance, you see some people in all walks of life of like, you are making a bad decision right now. And I don't even mean that like not in like the gross xenophobic way that so many people on the show are, of like, this person just here for the green card. But it's like, I'm saying to the person marrying the American, I'm like, run. You need to get out of here. You're in a bad situation. And like, so I totally understand the feeling of like, this is bad. And yet I'm also like, it's going to be there if I watch it or not. It just depends on like how I'm going to, you know.
It's like a freaking view of television.
I mean, it'll always be there. I can't stop it. So might as well watch the train wreck. But sometimes I have to take a break, because it's like, you know, it's a weird unreality of somebody is going through the situation. And so many people who have been on reality TV, like, do face horrific outcomes in their life from being on reality TV. And yet, it's also not real. Like, we're not just watching a live feed of something. Like, there's a story here.
Yeah.
And it's like, I need it. I consume it so much. It's people fascinating. Who
are like, people become, like, unemployable after, like, being on shows. Like,
I would never be on a show.
What do you do? Like,
yeah.
You're constantly that person. Like the people like typically will lose their jobs, or like, because the negative import of like being on a show just like impacts like job prospects. Yeah. There was like the first season of Love is Blind. There was the woman who was like an alcoholic, probably. It was like on the line, and she was like feeding her dog wine, which is like not okay.
Oh. Whoa.
Like, I don't think she has a job anymore. Like, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I get to argue. No, but I mean, I used to watch Cops, and it was the same thing. You know, when I was married to Mac's dad, I would, you know, we would just like, it's not us, it's not us, it's not us. You know, it's just total Schadenfreude. Just, you know, so I could totally. Yeah. Understand it, and so
it's like
totally
prison shows now. Well, like that's horrifying to me, or like border shows. I'm like this is disgusting. Like,
yeah, it's there like, are some levels I can't go to, and like I was really into Love Island, like, and that's a commitment, that's a time commitment. I was into the British one. I watched multiple seasons, and four people on that show, like, well, I don't want to get too dark. I'm sorry. But four people on that show, like, commit suicide. And after that, I was like, I can't watch this show anymore. Like, this, like, obviously there was something else going on in their life, but they didn't have to be on reality TV. And, like, you know, this definitely contributed something. And I was like, I cannot watch this anymore, you know? Yeah. So that it's like, it is real, you know? And then it's not. Yeah, like, you can't watch it and think, but like, this person is real. And they don't even get like the benefits of celebrity usually. They just get all the downsides.
I'm laughing, but it is intensely depressing.
I know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring it there.
No, that's there was somebody on Love is Blind who recently was like coming out about like, you know, dealing with like suicidal ideations after like being on the show and becoming like unemployable. Jesus. And like, but the per capita rate for like suicide for being like on a reality show was like incredibly high, oddly enough.
God.
Yeah. Gosh. Well,
so evil in society, I mean,
is
definitely not good. What benefit
is reality it? Television Videodrome?
I mean, that's where I was kind of going with that, but
it was good. That's why it's a good topic for this discussion.
Yeah. You're like, eh, whatever.
I don't know where to go after that, though.
I mean, I have a Videodrome tattoo. How about that?
You do? Holy cow! I can't see it though, Stefan. It's like fuzzy. Yeah,
I'll have to look on your Instagram because my screen is too fuzzy. Oh.
It's James Woods putting his face into the television, so you can't see his. Oh my gross god! In real life, face in any way because he's not a great person.
Yeah, that was
no. He's a bad man.
He's a very bad person. Yeah.
He's in this movie. I forgot about that.
It's because, like, I grew up with, like, this and also, like, he's, like, on an episode of The Simpsons that, like, are, like, my James Woods. When I think of James Woods, those are the two things that come up. And I'm like, he's kind of, like, ruined those. Not, I mean, like, you know, you can enjoy. Like, I still watch Rosemary's Baby. Roman Polanski's a piece of garbage, but.
Yeah. Mac, what do you think of Hades?
Hades.
From Hercules.
Oh, I mean, great character. I do love him.
I mean, like, good casting.
I mean, he's a horrible guy, but that was some great voice acting. I can't lie.
Yeah, he's a bad man. No, actually, watching this, I was kind of thinking about Jeremy Irons, who I don't know if he's a bad man. I don't think he's a bad man.
He sucks but, too. Yeah.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. He made a comment that you should be able to like grab women as like a sign of like admiration. Like it was like very much like cigar twirling, like Weinstein, like where it's just like, I'm just saying that I like this. What's wrong with that? It's like a lot, you know,
everything.
So much. Jeremy Irons sucks.
Kind of a look though. I was just thinking just like kind of a look, just like,
he's also, he's very short. He's very short in real life.
Who, James Woods?
No, sorry, Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons. He's gotta be like 5'5" or something.
I think we did this.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know how tall you guys are, but
we're shorter than that. But
okay,
he's 6'2".
But well, there's no way. There's no way. He's got to be sprightly. That's gotta be a lie.
Yeah. I just googled Jeremy Irons' height. It says 6'2".
So I'm 6 foot, and he is much smaller than I am. And I saw him in person, so like. Because they're doing like the TIFF retrospective of his career at a certain point, which is a wonderful exhibit because they had like all the like really cool props, and they had like feedback cards for like movies that had been tested, this included, where somebody was just like get rid of this movie is what like one comic card said, or like I don't understand what this is. this had an aggressively bad test screening where people were just like, I don't like this.
Well, we don't usually look at like the budget or anything on this show, but I did see that like it was $5 million and it made like $2 million. So, didn't have a great
long term. I'm sure it did all right. Like,
it's like $10 million in my heart.
Yeah.
Aww. It's
like I feel like horror sometimes can be like, you know, in a lot of cases misjudged. Like, look at like John Carpenter's The Thing and like tanked, but like look at its like long-term run, you know, its profitability was definitely achieved, but you know, in the long run
and the like cultural impact.
Yeah we don't have to just speak about it in capitalistic terms, right?
Yeah.
That's what really matters, though, right?
So, yeah. Show me really, the money. That's what we're all thinking.
So I did have this list of total films. Yeah, total films, 23 weirdest films. And I was wondering if you guys have seen these. So I think it's a weird list because the first one is Wizard of Oz.
Oh, can I add something here?
Yeah.
So if we've seen them, I think we should each thumbs up or thumbs down, and we don't have to qualify it in any way.
Okay. Yeah.
Sound good? Cool.
Yeah. So have you seen it, Mac? Seen parts of it?
I'm a thumbs down. I don't like The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, we're judging it. Oh, I thought it was whether or not you've seen it. Okay, you don't like it?
No.
I hate it. I don't like it.
Okay.
No, I don't. It's boring. It's boring.
You're allowed to like it. You thumbs up originally.
I was saying I have seen it. That's what I thought we were doing. But no, I don't care for this one. Okay. Okay, so Eraserhead, I haven't seen it.
No.
I don't like it. Yeah. I like a lot of David Lynch movies. By the way, Mac, you had like the most like, I feel like the most like prototypical college experience where like somebody's like, I love David Lynch and David Cronenberg. Like, it's like the most like film jockey experience, I feel like.
Yes. And I would say that's true. And also like I knew a lot of people who worked at like the college radio station. So yeah. I was just like, it could have been a movie. But yeah. I honestly felt like a square. Who's David Lynch?
I do like a lot of his movies, though. Eraserhead, I just don't like for whatever reason.
Being John Malkovich.
I've never seen that, actually.
I've seen it maybe once. I don't remember it. Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Sparkle Motion, is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they do? Yeah.
I think so. I don't know. I was kind of obsessed with that one when I first got sober. I don't know why. I just watched it over and over again. Okay, Pie.
Darren Aronofsky. I actually like Pie. Yeah.
Society, I've never seen it.
Brian Usna. It's a wonderful, oh, yeah. It's a wonderful yeah. movie.
Have you seen it, Mac?
Yes. again, the college roommate that was a big fan of that movie. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
Okay.
But it kind of felt like I had multiple guns to my head from a lot of horror fans of like, you like Society, don't you?
Okay. Visitor Q. I don't know this one.
It's Takeshi Miike, and it's like a lot. It's, but it's not a good, there's like incest, abuse.
Oh.
Scat play.
Hard pass.
Like, what?
So it's like a movie that you can't really find, I don't think, very easily anymore. I for whatever reason, I like blind bought a DVD in like university, as you do. Then I watched it and I was like, I regret everything that led me to this point. I think I still have it somewhere. I can mail it to you if you feel so obliged.
That's like a hard pass on a number of those topics for me. If Mac wants to see it, I would not begrudge him.
There was a point in the list where I was like, I'm out.
Stefan, how do you feel about Audition?
I like Audition. Yeah. I think it's a good comeuppance movie because the guy is a garbage person in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's enjoyable to a certain extent.
Altered States. Have you guys seen that?
Ooh, is that John Hurt, right?
Yeah.
I saw it a long time ago. I think it's a. I'll give it a middle thumb because I'm not sure.
Tetsuo the Iron Man.
I get thumbs Big up. Man. Yeah, yeah. Big good movie. Man.
Jacob's Ladder.
I need to interject that I never heard of Altered States and I looked it up. First thing I see is the 20 best stoner movies ever.
Yeah. Oh, it is 150% a stoner movie. Yeah. I like Jacob's Ladder. I gotta say.
Jacob's Ladder. Yep.
Yeah.
Have it's you seen Jacob's Ladder?
It's a weird time.
No.
Okay, put that on the list. All right,
worth looking at.
I Heart Huckabees.
Ooh, that's the movie where what's his name edited himself as an abusive director. God, what's his name?
Yeah,
he edited Amsterdam that tanked. And how does he still get work? I have no idea.
No, yeah,
David O. Russell.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
Gonna have to look that up. Okay, Boxing Helena.
I've never seen Boxing Helena.
I don't remember I remember the thesis of it and I mean the premise of it, and I've seen it, but I don't remember if I liked it or not.
Yeah.
Okay, Head, the one from 68 with the monkeys.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen that one actually.
Primer.
I like Primer a lot. A terrible person director. He was dating Amy Simetz, I think, if I'm correct, and he was a stalker. And was not okay. Yeah, he's been since canceled. Primer is an amazing movie, though, I have to say. I quite enjoy it. That's another movie made by a bad person that I think is good.
Have you seen that, Mac?
Never heard of it.
That's a super low-budge time travel movie.
Oh. It's like time dilation, so they have like a contraption that they've built that essentially the amount of time that you spend in it elapses time backwards, I guess, to, like, I think is the premise, right?
Yeah, I don't remember. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
Freaks, Todd Browning's Freaks.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long, long time.
I've never seen it. El Topo?
Is it Jodorowsky or Jodorowsky? Or I don't know the correct pronunciation, but I'm a fan. I like his stuff. Again, a very university director. That's definitely a movie that people are like, yo, this is going to blow your mind.
But I don't know who
Total Films. A lot of heavy breathing while they're showing you the movie.
Sick, the Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Super Masochist.
That's wild. Great name.
Yeah.
Thumbs up for the name.
Un Chien Andalou.
Oh, that's the goat eye slicing movie, I think, right?
Yeah. I've never seen it.
It's a blur, so it's probably a no for me, though.
Okay, and then the last one besides Videodrome is Picnic at Hanging Rock.
I like Picnic at Hanging Rock. It's a good movie.
Have you seen that one? It's got a very young John Jarrett.
I love this movie.
Like teenage John Jarrett.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in that.
Yeah, he was
I just remembered all the beautiful women. It was described to me as the... I think my friend called it like lesbian horror movie, and I was like, okay, cool. I mean, not like explicitly, but like I see what they're going with, what they're getting at. But I like that movie.
Okay. So to wrap up.
Your notepad, it's perfect.
My own notepad. No, I don't know. Okay, so. What would you say to someone who has never heard of this movie if you wanted them to watch it with you?
Like a one-liner sales pitch?
Yeah, how would you sell this movie to someone who's never seen it before?
James Woods pierces Debbie Harry's earlobe.
While they're fucking.
In parentheses. That's the text. That's it. That's all I have.
Okay, that's pretty good.
I think we all experienced television in like the cable era, where you can like, when the programming ends before like the 24-hour cycle, you could kind of like drop in and like get rogue signals. And I think the bad idea, which is like his David Cronenberg's jumping off point, like I think before he did Videodrome, he had this idea, and it was called like Network of Blood, which I kind of enjoy. It feels like a very 70s exploitation name for a movie. Doesn't make sense for in the context of his overall filmography, but as a name alone, I think it's kind of interesting. But I think that like somebody picking up a rogue signal, and it's almost like creating a noir scenario of like trying to track down its origin and like what it is and define what it is I think quite interesting. And you have to be okay with a hallucinatory adventure. Otherwise, I would say don't watch this.
Well, yeah, and I think for people who are maybe under the age of, I don't know, 20, I don't think this would make a whole lot of sense. Like, I don't, like, what are you talking about? Like, signals from, like, cables? What's cable? You know? Yeah. But,
Actually, there's a lot of, like, for a lot of young, like, young people on the internet, I think, there's this idea of, like, analog horror. And I feel like it feels up maybe, even to people really young, even if they haven't experienced it, it kind of feels like, I think I'm guessing it's like a bygone era I just missed, you know, and they might maybe weren't there, but they see what can be really creepy about it. And maybe it's even creepier because it's more mysterious of like, maybe they have never watched cable TV, but they're like, is that what it was like? You know, because it is a great aesthetic, like, yeah. You know, creepy low res videos, like makes sense why it's popular.
Yeah.
But anyway, you guys, aside from Videodrome, do you have another David Cronenberg movie that you like a whole bunch?
Scanners is my favorite, I think. Even though I recognize The Fly is his best movie, I think. And is, you know, neck and neck. But Scanners, for whatever reason, is like my duvet, like my comforter. I'm just like, I'm safe. Everything's good. I'm going to probably watch it like literally this week at some point, I think, because for me, it's like a wintry, like it's a cold movie.
I was thinking about watching it. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Matt? Dead Zone's another good one.
Oh, Dead Zone. I haven't seen that in a minute.
For me, it's The Fly.
Yeah.
But that could change. I want to watch more of his movies. Definitely love The Fly.
Thanks again to Stefan for joining us for this conversation. If you would like to catch previous conversations this year with Stefan, he joined me for episode 118, where we talked about Road Games, and for 108, when we talked A Bay of Blood. Thanks for all your support. It means the world of horror to us, truly. Coming up on the main show, Mac and I will be talking vamps, where we look at The Shadow of the Vampire from the U.S., and Rigor Mortis from Hong Kong. We also have a couple of retrospective shows planned to round out the year. Stay safe. Tell all your friends about us. But mostly stay safe. And come back next time. We love you. And don't go into the basement.